This episode is brought to you by Scene on the Screen with Jacqueline Coley. Join Jacqueline Coley as she hosts a new podcast, Scene on the Screen, presented by Make It Universal and Rotten Tomatoes. Meet the innovative people at NBC Universal as they share their journeys, inspirations, and the movies that define them. Each episode is an intimate and fun conversation about the impact of film. Scene on the Screen with Jacqueline Coley is available now wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Hey everybody, welcome to Literary Disco on Lit Hub Radio, episode 183, Shel Silverstein. Today, in a special parent-only episode, Julia and I discuss the work of poet, songwriter, cartoonist, and all-around Renaissance man of children's literature, Shel Silverstein. This is Literary Disco, the last book club you'll ever need. Today, Todd is away, so we are Julia and Ryder, two old friends who love to read, debate, and sometimes even agree. I am actor and filmmaker Ryder Strong. Joining me today, essayist and radio personality Julia Pistel. Hi, Julia.
Hi. Finally. Just us.
We got rid of the bad fucking energy.
I'm sure I made that same joke last time we did something about it. But we liked, our listeners should know, like, once in a while one of us is like, well, you guys could just go ahead without me. And the other two are like, no, we like our little unit.
No, I definitely think I actually think we're going to be missing some Todd energy today. Because I have a feeling you and I are kind of on the same page about Shel Silverstein, but I'm very curious what his thoughts are. So maybe we can have him weigh in next time we record with him.
Yeah, he probably would say it's stupid. We can take some guesses.
Some Todd guesses. Predictions on Shel Silverstein.
Although I don't know, because I suggested this as a subject. We, both Ryder and I, are in kid land more than ever due to the pandemic. So we don't really have time or brain power to read much other than poems that are 12 lines long.
Well, it's funny because originally we talked about maybe just doing a kid's book roundup, you know, sort of talking about what we've been reading to our kids lately. But the truth is, my son is turning 6 in a couple of weeks, and we've moved into chapter books. We're reading Harry Potter every night. So we've gotten away from, like, you know, children's books with illustrations and stuff, except for Shel Silverstein. This is sort of the perennial, his work still lasts. Indy gets Shel Silverstein every night. Every night.
Really?
I'm not doing it anymore. Like, I used to read our nighttime going to bed routine has, like, it's gone through so many different phases. It used to be I would tell him a story, either that I would make up on the spot, or I would, you know, try and remember Jack and the Beanstalk and tell my own version, or classic old stories that I would just kind of have in my head. And then he got bored of that. And I would read him poems, but I would read some Shel Silverstein, some sort of fun kid-like poems. And then other times I would just read full-on adult poems that I like. And then now we've just gotten into the habit where I go in, I read him Harry Potter. We're on the third book. We're almost finishing the third one right now. And then my wife goes in and sings songs and reads Shel Silverstein.
That's so nice.
Yeah, that's pretty much been our pandemic routine. Like, since quarantine, that's what we've fallen into. And he loves it. I mean, he still loves Shel Silverstein. They're still his favorites.
That's so nice.
Yeah. Not that we're going on trips, but whenever we pack for, like, if he goes to the grandparents overnight, that's what we pack for them to read to him is one of the Shel Silverstein collections. I'm totally in the bag for Shel Silverstein.
Oh, me too. That's why I suggested. I was like, this is easy. Cool. Wow. So I didn't even know that when I suggested it. I was just being lazy.
So are you reading all these poems to Vega every
so
night too?
So we kind of just started. So this is not, this is very interesting because I feel like we've got the entry and the exit into this level of reading right now. So Vega's 3. And she still loves this, you know, she loves the sounds of books and everything. So I was just reading some to her right before this, and she's very into the illustrations and the rhyming. And then, like, This is the delightful thing about Shel Silverstein is, you know, he's not a kiddie poet by any means. No. So there's one poem, I forget which one it is, but it has the word pee in it. Like, he went to pee, and she right. she looked at me. I know this is audio, but she was like, pee in a poem? Like, it was the yep. most scandalous thing she'd ever heard. And I was like, hell yeah. And then I read her the one that's like a warning against picking your nose, because yep. all I'm going to say is she's three, and I could see her like lower her hand and raise her hand and like really consider whether there's some snail inside her face that's going to bite her fucking finger off. So that's where we are. It's like, it's an interest and a fascination, but they're not in her vocabulary yet in the way that other books like Brown Bear, What Do You See? She has memorized and things like yep. that. But it's like we're putting this new rhythm and this new kind of poetry into her body, and she's very curious.
Oh, that's such a, yeah, that's so interesting. For Indy, it was, yeah, it was also the illustrations. Yeah, he was probably 2.5, 3 when we started reading Shel Silverstein seriously. And yeah, it's sometimes it's like there's an illustration, like there's the one about the bee, and you can see a person's butt, and the bee is like tattooed on the person's, a message on the person's butt. Like, Indy loved that one, you know, because it's like, oh, there's somebody's butt. And then there's the one called The Worst, which he was fascinated by. It's a poem about like a creepy, terrible monster. And there's a crazy illustration. It kind of looks like Sloth from the Goonies. You know, it's like this distorted face, and it's just it's just a short little poem about like the worst monster in the world being right behind you, you know. And he was both scared and intrigued. He would always want me to read that one to him, like that was, you know, he kept returning. And now you know, and then for a little while, and this is, I think this is still the case, he just wants the longer poems because that means we stay with him longer. Aww. Reading them. So yeah, you know, it's like the peanut butter sandwich one, the one about being sick for, you know, lying to stay home from school.
Oh, I remember that
and,
one
and,
so
yeah there. And now he's really getting into I feel like there's always something subversive about Shel Silverstein, right? There's like the yeah. element of subversiveness that you're talking about, which is just the, like the words and the illustrations, the sort of like, oh, this isn't appropriate. This isn't right for a kid to be reading or hearing. And then now there's this other subversion, which is this narrative subversion. Like, things don't have happy endings in Shel Silverstein's poems. No. Like, even, you know, even if it's a long narrative, like the long-haired boy is this, you know, boy who can suddenly fly, or, you know, with his hair, and then it just kind of, he just disappears. He just flies away one day and never comes back. And and stuff like that really lingers, and Indy loves it. He's like, what is going on? Why, you know, there's never, it doesn't have, well, I guess like a good point of comparison is like Dr. Seuss, right?
Yeah.
Or you think about other kids' poems, they wrap everything up. They make sense, or they end happily, in, even if there's some element of chaos. Whereas Silverstein, there's not a lot of happy stuff.
They certainly, and we got to put a pin in the Giving Tree in a second, because I really want to mm-hmm. talk about that. But they leave you with a sense of unease, you know, yes. which I love. Even the poems that are more sincere, they have that note in there somewhere, and it's often at the end. And of course, we got to read a couple, but I was digging into this poem earlier, Enter This Deserted House, and it's an illustration of a house, but that's not what the poem's about. And I'm like, this is such a good entry for a kid into how to read a poem. Enter this deserted house, but please walk softly as you do. Frogs dwell here and crickets too. Ain't no ceiling, only blue. Jays dwell here and sunbeams too. Floors are flowers, take a few. Ferns grow here and daisies too. Whoosh, whoosh, to wit, to woo. Bats dwell here and hoot owls too. Ha ha ha, hee hee hoo hoo. Gnomes dwell here and goblins too. And what is that? Let's just pause there, but that's not the end. And my child, I thought you knew, I dwell here, and so do you.
Oh, so good.
It's obviously about, obviously to me, about the earth and the planet we're sharing, and there's this very sincere message there, but it's got that creepy tone yep. of there's goblins here, and dun, 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 you live here.
Right.
It's very... It makes you feel off kilter in a way. And I feel like I just can't wait to like discuss with Vega, like, okay, what house has a blue ceiling and flowers on the floor? And it's just a very cool way to get into a poem.
If you're a fan of literary disco, then you're a fan of stories, and you should check out Far Away, a new short story collection from Amazon Original Stories. Far Away gathers five of today's most original best-selling authors for bold new takes on classic fairy tales. These are not your typical happily ever after kind of stories. These five stories for adults offer new takes on evil queens, charmless princes, and star-crossed lovers, taking old standards in new and interesting directions. The Faraway collection is available in audio and ebook format. Amazon Prime members listen and read for free. Download now at amazon.com/farawaystories. That's amazon.com/farawaystories. It's very similar to one of my favorites, This Bridge. This bridge will only take you halfway there to those mysterious lands you long to see, through gypsy camps and swirling Arab fairs and moonlit woods where unicorns run free. So come and walk a while with me and share the twisting trails and wondrous worlds I've known. But this bridge will only take you halfway there. The last few steps you'll have to take alone. I mean, it's basically like he's describing the act of reading and writing poetry, right? Like,
yeah,
or just being imaginative together. It's so beautiful. And like, again, like you said, kind of creepy. You're like, wait, I have to go these last few steps alone? What does that mean? And it leaves that lingering sense. Like, you always want to come back to Shel Silverstein poems. You're never quite settled. You know, it doesn't wrap it up with a bow and make you go, oh, that was cute. I mean, some of them do, of course, but I think for the most part, like, his overall effect is like, come back. You know, you're invited again to reread, to revisit, to look at the illustration closer and to be like, what is going on here? I love that.
We can come back to the poems, but I think that is like, we got to talk about The Giving Tree. And here's why I want to talk about it. So in the last 5 years or 10 years, I have a strong opinion about this. So this is a warning to the listeners. It's not going to surprise you. But it's become like the hottest, like, signal to other people to be like, I hate The Giving Tree. The Giving Tree actually sucks. And then everyone's like, yeah, that tree gives it all and that boy never thanks her. Who reads this shit?
Well, it's also like this hot take on like, this is extreme parenting, right? Like, this is the problem with the way people approach parenting is they act like the tree and they think that this is a good story about being a good parent is that you just constantly are giving. I think that's kind of the point. That's what's so great about it.
So I feel like if that's what you feel, if you feel that upset about the way that The Giving Tree goes plot-wise, then you should be reading that with your kid. That is,
absolutely.
You need to lean into that. I mean, how many children's books, I mean, I probably have 100 books like this in my home. That's just some mother cuddling a kid or a daddy or a bear parent or whatever. And they're just a parent figure there, comforting and loving, which, of course, like, great to have that. But, like, children don't question that. They don't question, like, what it takes or what it drains from someone else to take care of you. And they should feel that unease. They should feel that open-ended, you know, question. Like, oh, was this fair? You know, was this right? And I think what people forget is, like, Shel Silverstein doesn't have a pat little ending. He just leaves it open, like he does with all these poems. Like, and now it's a stump. See you later.
I mean, it's important to remember. I think a lot of the reason that the parents turn against the Giving Tree, especially in our generation, is because they did grow up with it and they don't quite remember it correctly, right? Mm-hmm. They remember it being a sad, important, weird story. But then when you read it again as an adult, let me put it this way. When you're a kid, it's like I put myself in the perspective of the little boy, you know? And what was sad to me was how quickly he grew up and like all the things that he was, you know, going off to do that happens off page that I remember being like, what? He's getting so old. He keeps changing, you know? And that was the sort of tragedy as a kid. Then you read it as a parent and you of course see that the real tragedy is that this poor tree is left alone and being taken advantage of. But I think it works both ways. That's the point, is that in both cases, it's a sad, tragic experience. Like, nobody's happy. The little boy does, you know, he's taking advantage of the tree, but he's not happy. He's unhappy. He keeps coming back because things aren't working out for him. And, you know, his life isn't going so great. And he has to keep coming back to the tree. So I feel like that the negative reading is the point.
Yeah.
and you were supposed to be sad by it, both as grown-ups and kids. And I think that, you know, it's like Todd's favorite song, Cat's Cradle,
which yes, is, I always, you know, think of that when I read this, yeah, too.
Yeah. It's like, it's, you know, it's just a perfect narrative that we all can relate to. You know, it also makes me think of, do you remember the play Our Town?
Of course.
Yeah.
Did I, as a young theater nerd, do the final monologue in audition?
Of course.
Who didn't?
Right. And it's the same message, right? It's like, enjoy your life before it passes you by too fast. And like that profound sense of like regret or like missing out on either being a parent or being a kid or just living your life. Oh my God. It's like when a piece of art can tackle that feeling and that panic, I think it's, you know, it's rare and it's a difficult subject, but I think The Giving Tree does it perfectly.
Yeah. And I have the text pulled up right here, and the end does, the last line is, and the tree was happy, but now that I'm in the like pandemic zone, I'm just reading this a whole different, like a third way right now. So let me just read to you the last little bit. So, I don't need very much now, said the boy, just a quiet place to sit and rest. I am very tired. Well, said the tree, straightening herself up as much as she could. Well, an old stump is good for sitting and resting. Come boy, sit down and rest. And the boy did, and the tree was happy. And so taken alone, that part is like, these people have nothing left to give. You know what I mean? Right. But they still can connect and unite, yep, even though they're completely depleted and right, have nothing left. Does that sound familiar?
They've been sitting in the same house for 9 months.
But yeah, like yet another way to look at like giving and taking and receiving. When you're old and you've got nothing left, you still have something to offer and right, something to accept. And that's really, it's cool.
I mean, the thing is, unconditional love may not be the healthiest thing in the world, but we all feel it, right? Mm-hmm. We all have some version of unconditional love in our life, whether it's our parents, our, you know, our partners, our kids. There's at some point you reach that boundary where it's like, oh, I just want to be with this person. I just want to keep giving, even though it's hurting me. So to me, it's an incredibly universal message. It's sad, but it's true.
Yeah. And the backlash is so funny to me. It's like just trying to erase it from the world won't make people stop doing that. I mean, I've been talking to other parents more than I ever have during this pandemic, and people are so much more depleted and so much more like in the struggle than I think they always were, but now they're just admitting it more.
Yeah.
And when we take away stories like this and pretend that parenting or teaching or any of the other analogous things here, that any caregiving is easy, you know, we all lose. Not easy.
Yeah.
Have you read, this is a Shel Silverstein book I picked up in college. The Missing Piece and the Big O.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. That's a lesser known, but I just reread it. We have it here right before this. And that's all about this little like wedge trying to find a place to fit in. And it's all about finding a partner who doesn't like deplete you and own you.
Right.
It's very cool book. People should go check that out.
Yeah, I actually don't own a copy. I remember it from when I was a kid, but we actually don't have a copy for indie, so I should.
All right, I'll summarize it really quick, although
yeah,
summarizing a picture book is kind of like a worse version of the picture book. So there's this little wedge, and it's called The Missing Piece, and it's looking for something to fit into, and all these other circles with a missing wedge roll by, and the wedge, like sometimes the wedge is doesn't fit, or sometimes like the circle thing won't roll.
Yeah.
And it just explores all these different ways that people try to fit partners into their life. And it doesn't work. And then finally what happens is a full circle comes by. And the wedge is like, well, I want to be with you, but you're not missing anything. And the circle's like, damn right, I'm not missing anything. Maybe I'll see you again someday. Yeah. And then the wedge is like, but I'm a wedge. I have to fit into something. And the circle just says, corners rub off. And then the wedge learns to roll until they're two full circles and they're both complete.
Wow. Yes. That's so great.
Such a good story. And every page is a full metaphor. Very short. But it's really good.
And it's so that, like, to me, the lesser children's book, which is constantly written, is that, you know, the wedge finds the perfect half circle, right? Or that it fits into. Because I feel like that is so many children's books that you can, especially the illustrated ones. It's like, here was a weirdo who did not fit in some capacity, whether that's an animal that doesn't have a friend, you know, or mm-hmm. just does some weird thing. And then they find that other person who's also weird like them, or they find that group of people that are also weird and they fit in perfectly. End of good, happy children's book. I hate those things. I hate those books. It's like, it's just, you know, and I don't even really remember them. I don't think Indy remembers them. We definitely plowed through a lot of those kinds of stories and they're just totally forgettable. You know, I remember also with Shel Silverstein, I was thinking about this morning when I was going through the poems. My parents wouldn't read me certain poems. and I always knew that. I always knew that there were certain ones that my parents would skip. And I was trying to find out which ones. The only one I can remember for sure is there's a poem he has, like, Someone Ate the Baby. Mm. It's kind of a weird poem. I remember that one. And then there's one where, like, a guy... It's like he peels his skin off and somebody else puts his skin on. And he's like, so if you see me acting weird, it's because it's the cuckoo wearing my skin. And I'm sure my parents skipped that one. You know, anything that was a little too disturbing or macabre, my parents. But I think that also intrigued me. You know, like, it made me want to go find the book when my parents weren't around and flip through it.
Yeah.
And that's what, you know, Indy loves to do that. You know, he just jumps around through the book. He actually wore out our copy of Where the Sidewalk Ends to the point where now we use it as a journal. He can write in it. And we bought another copy to read because the whole binding fell apart. He had worn through it so much.
That is so cool.
Just flipping through, finding, you know, the little, because the illustrations are so, they're it's that perfect amount of, like, detail and childlike sort of whimsy. You know, that they're just weird enough and interesting enough and just detailed enough to be kind of uncomfortable. I love the whole package.
Yeah, I mean, when I read Shel Silverstein, and probably just Light in the Attic and Where the Sidewalk Ends, because these are the ones I read as a kid, there's something, like, you reconnect with this feeling that, you know, you've been here before, but so early that you don't actually remember it. And there's so few books that meet that criteria that's such an exciting feeling.
Yeah.
So let me ask you something. How's Indy doing with his reading? Is he reading any of these by himself?
No. Excuse me. No, he's he can read at this point. Like, he can, you know, basically sound out any word. But I'm not putting the pressure on it. You know, he's doing Zoom kindergarten right now. So he's learning math and reading via a screen every morning, which is just so disturbing. So I'm not putting I'm not putting too much pressure on him, because I want him to enjoy the act of reading more than it to be like a chore. So, but whenever I'm reading Harry Potter at night, he sits next to me and reads over my shoulder and he points to words. Mm-hmm. So he's at that, you know, and of course Harry Potter's so, the page is so dense, he just kind of randomly will be like, does that say Sirius Black? And I'm like, yes, it does. He's like, so he's gonna show up. You know, so he just finds words that, you know, like that, but he's not trying to read along or anything. But yeah, no, with Shel Silverstein, he's not quite, he just wants to look at the illustration still. So he's not quite, he could if he actually put his mind to it, but I'm not putting the pressure on him. I just want to enjoy the act of reading.
Yeah, you know, this is tangential now, but I'm so glad we're talking about this, because so Vega's only 3, but she's in preschool and they're learning their letters and, like, writing. And obviously I'm the reader of the house. And I keep saying to Greg, I'm like, this is insane. Like, she does not have to do this. I don't care at all. And he's like, you know, as someone who's more into the tech side of life and has anxiety around reading, he's like, well, you know, like, isn't it good that she's gonna be doing all this stuff, and I'm like, she's gonna learn to read. Like, to explain to me a reality in which this child right. in my house will not learn to read. She's gonna learn to read,
right?
And I'm trying to get her more, even as she learns more letters and is really interested and is starting to identify stuff out of curiosity. I'm trying to get her more books with no words, because she's already gotten into a couple of times. She's been like, I can't read this. Like, she's like some 40-year-old.
Right.
And I'm like, forget it. Forget it. Like, just look at the pictures and tell me what the story is. So I totally agree. I'm trying to back off really hardcore, you know, while at the same time she's curious and reinforcing it. It's very interesting.
Well, so Indy has two friends who can read his age. Actually, they're slightly younger than him. And the difference between the two of them is one is a little girl who is a voracious reader already, like can read chapter books to herself and does it at night. And her parents actually threaten to take away her books as a punishment, which they feel horrible about, but it's the only way to get through to her, to like listen to them sometimes, which is fascinating. The other friend is a boy who can read anything. Like, he's been, since the age of, like, since he turned 5, basically, he can read anything, but never wants to. Has no desire to pick up a book, does not want to read, you know, and that to me is like what I'm most afraid of.
Yes.
Is that Indy would gain the technical skill, but think that it's just a sort of means to an end that he has to do sometimes for school. So I've taken my foot off the gas a lot when it comes to reading. I do not want to pressure him. He's written us notes. So while he's in Zoom, you know, probably bored as hell, like all kids, especially kindergartners, are staring at a screen. He's been writing notes to me and Alex, horribly misspelled, you know, combination of capital letters and lowercase, depending on which letter he likes better. But he'll fill a whole page. Like, how are you doing, mom and dad?
That's
I love
so
you.
Cute.
I miss you. I want to see you. You know, and I like that, and I've been writing him notes and passing him notes during the school day when he's in Zoom and stuff. So I'm hoping that, we just keep the interest in the activity going. And he's always loved poetry. He loves the sound of poems. And every night he asks for them. So, poetry, I'm so happy that poetry is not this intimidating, weird form, that it's something that he understands and likes and appreciates. Another great comedy kids poet who's not as well known is this guy named Jack Prelutsky. Have you ever encountered
this stuff? When I was a kid, we would read this Jack Prelutsky book every single night.
Oh, great. Yeah, now, see, I don't really know his work. I didn't grow up with it at all. So I found it, I've only found it online, a couple poems online. So I need to go out and buy one of his books and really dive deep. But one of Indy's favorite poems, even more than almost any of the Shel Silverstein's, is a Jack Prelutsky poem called Bleezer's Ice Cream Store. And it's just, the whole joke is like, you know, come into my store, you'll find flavors that you've never found before. And then the poem is just a list of the most disgusting combination of flavors you could ever imagine for ice cream. And it rhymes, so it sounds really great, but it's like, you know, checkerberry, cheddar, chew, or like all these weird, you know, it's like avocado with jam, like it's just the most disgusting things you could ever imagine. Bubble gum and broccoli. It's so fun. And Indy just loves it. I mean, he's basically memorized it. So when we read it aloud, he's like almost shouting it along with me, each flavor, you know, and how disgusting it would be. And we get all grossed out reading it. It's so much fun.
Yeah.
But he's the only other one, because like I really am not a Dr. Seuss guy, and I am not, they're just too long, and they're, you know, Dr. Seuss also is less, a lot of those books that sort of people remember as being Dr. Seuss weren't even written by one person. They sort of have that like Dr. Seuss brand, but you know, they're just kind of rhymey. It's not really written by the same person, and it doesn't have the same feel. I mean, I like his like The Lorax is great. I love some of his longer story ones. But like, I don't know, the Cat in the Hat, I could just do without it. I don't care. I don't know what's going on. It's so repetitive.
We have a lot of the board books, which are much shorter.
Right.
Some editor went crazy and whittled them down to like a mere 30 pages.
Good.
But I actually like the ones that are not stories, but are just completely about sounds. Like Hop on Pop is the big one here.
Right.
Because
Fox and Socks.
Yeah, Fox right. and Socks is a story though. Like it's a conversation. It's a scene. Right. Where Hop and Pop is just random, like, no, Pat, no, don't sit on that. And that's a big hit here. And you can see Vega, like, relating the sounds. I mean, Shel Silverstein, Jack Prelutsky, Dr. Seuss, they're all very close to music. And Shel Silverstein was a musician, too. So I'm like, this reading is actually bringing her closer to a musical vocabulary and a musical knowledge. Yeah. And vice versa. So we're still in for Dr. Seuss. But yeah, the first time that we accidentally read a full length one, we were like, oh my God, this is way too long. We have our bedtime routine. So another association I don't want her to have is like books make you fall asleep.
Right.
Because Greg has that. If he reads, he just gets really just sleepy.
Zoned out, right?
Yeah. So we read three silly books and then one or two quiet books. So the silly books are like all out. Voices, right. Insanity. You have actors as parents. Excitement.
Yes.
And then there's some transition to quiet books. And she totally loves that division. And the quiet books are all more musical and more rhythmic and less about being ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, it's so much about poetry. I mean, in a weird way, it's like we're teaching our kids the rhythms of the English language. You know, we're introducing them to the possibility for language to become meaningful in a sensory way, you know, not just meaningful in like a transmission of information, but actually like enjoying the musicality and the sound and the rhythm. And I think that's super important. I think that's kind of the point of poetry, especially, you know, before, because I mean, you know, now I think indie is really into meaning and irony and all the subversiveness, but certainly at when he was Vega's age, it was just about the sounds, you know. The other week, Alex made the mistake of trying to read him The Raven, Edgar Allan Poe, which is a long ass poem.
Yeah, another long one.
Oh my God. But so the next day, Indy was like, we read the longest poem last night. And he couldn't stop talking about it. Yeah. And I was like, what did the Raven keep saying? He's like, nevermore? Dad, what was going on? And Alex turned to me, she was like, yeah, what the hell is The Raven about? And I was like, I actually can barely remember. I was like, I think death, his wife died or his partner died and she's never coming back. And the Raven is just scary and there and telling him it's death. It's never, you know, the person's never coming back. But, you know, it almost didn't matter. Like Indy just loved the sound and the sort of atmosphere of the poem itself. And it did its job in that way. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, it's a blast. Definitely the top five most fun things about having kids is reading them books.
Yes, definitely.
And the thing about poems is you read them a bazillion times. You're not going to read them once and then be done with it. You're going to come back to them 100 million times. So they better be good.
Yeah, which is why it's hard to write these things, you know, because you have to appeal to both a sort of adult sensibility of the person who's going to be reading this with their kid. And you have to appeal to that while also being fun and funny and accessible for a 3-year-old. it's a tricky line. I mean, it's crazy to me that there aren't more sort of wannabe Shel Silversteins in the world. And maybe there are, but like, I mean, we've really only been able to come up with Jack Prelutsky, Shel Silverstein. You can kind of put Dr. Seuss in a similar category. But are there like any other world famous New York Times best-selling? I don't know.
Oh, well, we probably talked about this when we did kids' books. Sandra Boynton, I'm sure I put her in the mix.
I don't know her.
She's a lot. This is even younger. This is like babies. If you saw a cover, you would know, because this is everywhere. She actually started by illustrating greeting cards, and then I think got rich off greeting cards. I read a New York Times article about her. And then she started making these like silly little books for babies. And they are like, the first time you read them, you're like, this is so stupid.
And then you get kind
of
hooked.
The end time, you're like, I am all in. So one of them, I got to pull it up. The text of Eek Halloween. So this is Vega's favorite Halloween book. And it's about these chickens who don't get what Halloween is.
Oh, that sounds great.
Yeah. I don't even need to look it up. I've memorized. There's a big round moon in a dark, dark sky. The chickens are restless. Do you know why? Strange things are happening. One saw a pumpkin with flickering eyes. One saw a mouse of enormous size. So it goes on like that. I do know the whole thing. But it's the same like silly rhythm and like very cute. What feels like very cute rhyming first. Rhyming is tricky. It's either really stupid or it like unlocks really cool things. And so she's on the edge. The rhymes are really silly, but they're really cute. And then another book that isn't advertised as a poem, but I'm like, this is a perfect fucking poem, is Little Blue Truck, which is so popular.
Oh, yes.
I am obsessed with Little Blue Truck because I feel like if you weren't into, like, if you just read, you'd be like, oh, kids love this because of trucks. And I'm like, no, kids love this because the words are perfect. Like, this writer made a spreadsheet and every word foreshadows a rhyme.
Yes.
And I'm just so into Little Blue Truck.
Yeah, there's a sequel to it, too, right? I think there's a second one. Yeah.
Little Blue Truck one commercial. I think there's a bunch of them. anyway, I feel like there are a lot of writers who are using the same skill set, but maybe like going all in as a children's poet is kind of out of publishing fashion. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, I wonder how much even Shel Silverstein embraced it wholeheartedly, you know, because he was a songwriter. He also wrote a lot for Playboy. Like he toured the world doing these sort of, it seems like he was sort of dragged kicking and screaming into being a children's author, which is kind of makes sense, right? Like that's the way it feels. I know I like that too. Yeah. That quality, it's super fascinating. That I think that's part of the package. It's why it's lasted as long as it has. So everybody,
we recommend it.
Read Shel Silverstein to your kids. Go out and buy every Shel Silverstein book.
And the missing piece in the Big O, if you're looking for love or friendship.
Literary Disco is produced and edited by Justin Alvarez for Lit Hub Radio. You can reach out to us directly on Twitter at Literary Disco. Happy reading, everybody. Thanks for listening. Yeah.